This is Colorful Radio.
You ready? Let's count together. One, two, three. Whoa!
Six. Let's go. It's getting cold over here.
Six, baby. Let's get it.
Is there nothing better to do on a Monday night?
Sir, just step back, please.
I'm back.
All right, sir, just step back,
live
please.
Right there. All right, there. And I'm walking home anyway.
I got you, sir. Get the fuck out.
Yo, they shot him.
Yo, y'all shot him!
This organization has seen quite a bit of you, and we really like you. And I believe 100% you're going to go in the first round.
You know, I feel like everywhere I go, I'm reminded of what happened.
What's happened about that shooting?
And if he wasn't resisting arrest, he'd still be here.
Yes. So if I resist arrest, you're gonna shoot me.
I know what you think you saw. Starting trouble now, do a disservice to everybody.
One cop goes too far, and now we're all guilty? Is that what you're saying?
Larson is just this month's victim.
I wanna get involved. Do what you do.
So what do the police want with you?
They didn't want me to keep quiet.
I saw the tape.
So what, you're gonna go blab about it? They're gonna make an example out of you.
What should I do?
Just got a new job. I'm about to graduate. Everything's gonna change if you just put this out there.
Well, what would you do? What would you do if somebody twice your size is coming at you?
He was surrounded by six or eight cops.
Take seconds, Lisa.
He's dead.
Cities are gonna keep burning. Keep getting shot.
You're under arrest.
I didn't do nothing.
The cops are gonna keep getting off. But you have a ticket out.
You have no idea. You don't have a clue what goes on the streets. You see 3 minutes of a shaky video and you think you know what you do.
Right, so let's take you back to 12 months ago when Monsters and Men was first screened at Sundance. Talk to us through the process of getting the film into Sundance and your reaction when it got selected.
We shot September 2017,
right?
Which, if you think about that timeline, is so tight. And to get the film accepted into Sundance, which is just a few months later, was incredible. We had two editors editing the entire course of the production, and we had about a week and a half to get our cut into Sundance for their cutoff date. So we were up against the wall, you know, the clock, and you know, it was incredible to have the ability to get your first film seen on that stage is really remarkable. So yeah, that call was pretty incredible. Kim Utani, who's now the director of programming at Sundance, it used to be Trevor Groth, and he's since left. And Kim Utani gave me the call, and I remember jumping on my bed, and my son was there, and it was just a really, you know, incredible moment, you know. And, you know, I had my short film play at Sundance Stop, and to go back with a feature film was really just, you know, it felt like it came full circle. We had been supported by the Sundance Institute in the screenwriting, directing, and producing phase of the project. So, you know, we knew we had support from Sundance, but there's a lot of films that were supported by Sundance that didn't get in, that didn't make the cut. They take so few films. And so to be a part of that, was really remarkable, and I felt truly like Sundance was the home for the movie. Oftentimes, subject matters that that this film sort of tackles, they get lost in the shuffle at the film festivals, and sometimes you need a platform. And Sundance has championed movies that tackle difficult subject matters for years and years, and that's what the institute was founded on. That's what the festival's founded on. Diverse voices, and you know, so I knew the power of getting in. And if you miss that cutoff, again, there's tons of great festivals. You know, Cannes and Tribeca and South by Southwest, but again, not that many films get purchased out of those festivals. So getting a distributor becomes infinitely much more difficult. In particular, with this particular subject matter that we're talking about here, so Sundance was absolutely the right home for this particular project. again, just truly grateful to have gotten that call and then to go in January and celebrate with our cast and crew that put the time and effort into the film was really, you know, a magical moment in the process.
I'm putting to words what it then meant for a first time feature filmmaker to then suddenly get the jury award at Sundance.
Yeah, that was, it was a surprise. Listen, I don't think, you know, of course, it's like any athlete, I guess, right? If you're playing the game, you want to win. you're not thinking about it. You're not necessarily thinking about, like, I want to be the MVP of my team. You're thinking about how do I put up the most numbers every day I go out there? And so, you know, of course, you're just pushing yourself. So once we got into Sundance, all of a sudden, there was a new bar that was set because, okay, well, we're in now. Now what, you know, and that becomes the next question. Well, I guess we have the opportunity to place for an award, and we did. To come home with a jury prize was incredible. That means that, you know, all the juries had to agree and say that this film is deserving. And that it's a testament to the work that the cast and crew put together. You know, we made something that we felt was special. It was telling our truth, and to be recognized on that level, on that stage, that platform, against the competition that was out there was remarkable. So it's something I will cherish for the rest of my life, and hopefully, you know, it continues to push the envelope and what I choose to do next. And it just sets a bar that you want to keep, you know, climbing to reach and supersede.
So what was it about the film that piqued the interest of Drake's business partner?
I think Drake, you know, in Drake's history, he's talked about a lot of the issues that happened in Monsters and Men. So I think it was an immediate fit for him. It was something that he was vocal about, you know, in his music, in interviews that he had done before. So, you know, the themes of the film obviously hit a nerve. You know, I didn't know Drake or Future before the festival. And to know that Future was in the audience, saw it live with 1200 people, with like everybody else, and said that he, you know, I remember meeting him in New York afterwards and said, you know, it'd be an honor that Monsters and Men is our first film. He was getting into film and television, and to say Monsters and Men is the film that we want to champion first was quite an incredible, opportunity for us and for the film. And we knew that Drake's reach is incredible. You know, he posts a picture or a tweet and it reaches, you know, a mass audience in a way that, is obviously super beneficial to movies, to any film, or any song for that matter. So yeah, it was, you know, to get that phone call was really cool. We didn't know exactly what it meant, you know, to get that blessing, but that was enough. You know, anything was sort of icing on the cake at that point, because you have someone that's saying, hey, we think this film is important, and, we're willing to put our name out there to help, you know, give the recognition that we feel the film deserves. And, you know, that's special. And we've talked about making other movies together and other shows together. So I think it's just the start to a long, fruitful relationship with Drake and Future and his team. And they'll be around for a while. They're not going anywhere. They're really, savvy, and they know what they're doing. So, I'm excited. It's been really helpful for us, in getting the movie out, getting the word out, especially here in the UK. You know, it's one of Drake's, I think it's probably Drake's biggest market is in the UK. So, it goes a long way. People will hear about it. And whether it's DVD or online, at some point in the lifespan of the film, you'll look back and say, I think it was really, really helpful to have somebody of his caliber, lend their name to the film.
And given your connection with Drake, the opportunity has now come for you to direct episodes of Top Boy, which means working with British actors. What's that like?
Yeah, it was fun. You know, the accents are different for sure. You know, listen, I was really embraced here in the UK, and I think in part when I got off the plane, Jan Dimash, who directed the first season of Top Boy, introduced me to the cast, and he really showed me around London and said, "Hey, this is Kano. This is Ashley. Let's be brothers in this process." And so there was no, you know, the transition was smooth. You know, I was being introduced by somebody that they respected. Jan is an incredible director, just did his feature White Boy Rick. And he did 71, which is, you know, critically acclaimed. And he's a terrific director. And to have someone of his caliber say, "This is the guy," all of a sudden, you know, the cast was on board. Like, you know, if Jan says it, cool. And then, of course, the producers of the show, the showrunners, Ronan Bennett, you know, those guys really embraced me. You know, they saw the film. They saw Monsters and Men. They saw the crossover between Monsters and Men and Top Boy. You know, very similar worlds. You know, and they said they loved the tone of my film. They loved the tone of the film. They loved how we achieved what we did on the scale of that movie. And they thought that that could elevate Top Boy, which has been off the air for six years and now is a Netflix series. And so, you know, again, I didn't feel any sort of hiccup there. You know, living in Brooklyn, being born in the Bronx, growing up in Staten Island, you know, I've seen my fair share of, say crime, if you will, even in my own family. So, you know, I have a familiarity with that part of the community. And so, but I also know that, you know, those folks need to be humanized, and oftentimes they're not. You know, we just, you know, on TV kind of exploits certain communities. And what I love about Top Boy is that it's a human show. You know, it shows different perspectives, the same way that Monsters and Men does, about a community that's been kind of left on the margins. And, you know, how do we talk about the issues in those communities? Yes. Is there crime? Absolutely. But why? You know, how do these circumstances, you know, how do we get to these circumstances? And I think Top Boy is holistic that way. You know, we show multiple sides, and it's not just about crime. It's not a crime show, in my opinion. It's a human show that definitely, you know, talks about real issues, real things that are happening in London today. It's contemporary. I think season three is going to be spectacular, not just because of my involvement or Drake's involvement. It's because the show is brilliant writing.
This is Colorful Radio.